This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. On Tuesday of this week, Eleanor Cliff, the longtime columnist for Newsweek, now the Daily Beast, and the longtime panelist on the McLaughlin Group, tweeted regarding the over-the-top coverage of problems with the healthcare.gov website, quote, "Get a grip, folks. It's just a website and it will get fixed. The White House shouldn't be so defensive. It just invites the media to pile on," unquote. I had not seen anybody else take that perspective on this story, so I said, okay, Eleanor, come on the show and let's talk about this. And so here she is. Hi, Eleanor. Welcome to America Weekend.
Hi. Very glad to be with you.
Is it still, after what we've heard the last few days, the testimony from the people running these websites behind the scenes who are supposedly responsible for all the coding and everything else, is it still just a website problem?
I think it is. If you look at the history of these kinds of ventures, specifically the rollout of the prescription program during the Bush administration, they had similar problems. And some of the same people who were pleading for time then to fix it are the ones who are most critical today. But in fairness, the prescription drug program was a much smaller program. It was not President Bush's signature legislative achievement. And, you know, I think a lot of people who support this president are pretty angry that they let this happen, that there could have been more oversight. I think there was too many assumptions that all the contractors were doing just fine and they should have done the testing. But having said all that, yesterday, Jeff Zients, who they've brought in, he's kind of a business systems guy, did a phone call with reporters, and he said, you know, the consensus of all the, you know, the outside experts they brought in is that the site is fixable, and he basically set a deadline of the end of November for most of the bugs to be out of it. He used a lot of computer lingo. He said they have a punch list, and they're prioritizing the problems, and they're punching through. So, I mean, if that's the case and things are running, you know, much more smoothly by the end of November, you know, people have still, you know, months to sign up. So I think this will be forgotten, you know, once, you know, if in fact he delivers on that promise.
I think so, too. And I also remember that Americans always wait until the last minute. A lot of people don't do their taxes until April 14th. We don't always.
Right.
Nobody thinks 6 months ahead of time, oh, I have to do this by March, or I better get on it right now. Most people aren't going to even think about it until after Valentine's Day. But I am
right.
Curious what you think of how the administration has handled this. Were they irresponsible in rolling something out that they had not fully tested end to end?
Oh, I think they had a misplaced confidence, and I suspect them, you know, as the story unfolds, maybe we'll hear more about the sort of the yes men and women in the administration who were saying, you know, we can do this, no problem. I think they were spooked by the politics if they had announced any kind of delay, or if they had wisely said the site will be informational only the first few weeks, and we will gradually open all the various portals. If they did any of that, the critics were waiting to jump on them. And so I think they probably plowed ahead despite some warning signs. And I do think the criticism does go to a legitimate rap on this president, that he is not, you know, fully engaged, that the Obama brand is sort of above the battle. And, you know, you really needed somebody, you know, riding herd on everybody and saying, look, if we don't get this right, you know, it's going to be a big issue. It's going to be a political problem for the president, for the administration. I don't think there's a figure like that within the administration. And I think Jeffrey Zients is the closest to it right now. And he sure sounded reassuring on the phone, like he knows what he's doing. So,
Eleanor, I want to play a quick clip for you from the hearing that they had this week in the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, where the Republicans wanted to talk to these private contractors. And Joe Barton, who's the chairman, was going after one of the contractors, Cheryl Campbell, and saying that, you know, it's not HIPAA compliant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
No.
And then finally, Frank Pallone, a Democrat from New Jersey, got his moment in the sun and took to the mic to say this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I start out in my opening statement saying there was no legitimacy to this hearing, and the last line of questioning certainly confirms that. HIPAA only applies when there's health information being provided. That's not in play here today. No health information is required in the application process. And why is that? Because pre-existing conditions don't matter. So once again, here we have my Republican colleagues trying to scare everybody.
Will the gentleman yield?
No, I will not yield to this monkey court or whatever this thing
is. This is not a monkey court.
Do whatever you want. I'm not yielding.
Okay, so they went back and forth then for a minute or
right.
so. What do you think of that, and what does that tell us about politics on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think Congressman Pallone is exactly right. If it wasn't a monkey court, it was a kangaroo court, whatever animal you want to choose. I mean, they weren't there to figure out how to make things better. They were there to sort of point fingers at the administration and to raise fears among the public that if you go on this site, that somehow your information is going to get swallowed up in the great administration maw, and you could be compromised. When in fact, the beauty of the Obamacare insurance is that it doesn't matter what your health history is. You can get insurance. The only question they do ask is whether you smoke, I believe. So I think he made an important point, and one of the reasons that the Republican criticism has been so loud and so directed at this at a program they never wanted to succeed is that they're still trying to undermine it. And if they can make people fearful enough that they don't go online to enroll, mostly important if they scare away the young healthy people who look at this as, oh, this is a fiasco, I don't need to be part of it, then they will have accomplished something. So I think we've got more of this ahead next week. Kathleen Sebelius will testify on Capitol Hill. Be interesting to see if there is, bullying with her as they were with the members of the that appeared before this other committee.
One of the things that I find interesting about this, Eleanor, is that the blue states that have adopted their own version of the Affordable Care Act, where they're implementing their own, they seem to be not having so many problems, and they're signing up a lot of people. It's the 26 red states that have not done it, who refuse to go along and are letting the federal government. Are they actually creating this problem?
Well, I mean, I think it complicates it because I think the administration assumed that states, even if they were republically inclined and red, would still want more flexibility and more power over the construction of these exchanges within their states. Instead, they just left it up to the federal government. So it was a bigger task, I think, than the feds expected. But, even some of the red states, Kentucky and Arkansas in particular, Kentucky Connect is doing very well. And Arkansas has also developed a plan that seems to be working. And people have no idea it's Obamacare. I mean, there's an anecdote out of Kentucky where, two guys are examining the options at one of these sort of open fairs for enrollment. And the one guy concludes this is a much better deal than Obamacare. In fact, it's Obamacare by another name. So that may help as we go forward.
Well, that's like the polls that say people want the Affordable Care Act, but they don't want Obamacare. When in fact, of course, they're the same thing.
That's right. And now you have the Wall Street Journal referring to the expanded Medicaid in the states that have accepted it as Obamacade, trying to, put a taint on it so that the other states won't accept it. I think that's another miscalculation. The administration assumed that even Republican states and Republican governors and legislatures would accept this because it's free money, at least at the beginning. And then the federal government picks up more than 90% of the cost. So I think that's been a surprise to them that they had to deal with all of these exchanges.
All right, I've only got 30 seconds left here.
Medicaid would leave so many people out.
I've only got 30 seconds left, Eleanor. Is the bottom line now that they have to get it right by November 30th?
Oh, if they don't. if they don't and they miss a self-imposed deadline, then we'll all be saying, boy, that was dumb of them to set a deadline. But, no, I think they do have to get it right, yes.
Yeah, otherwise that's when things would really blow up and be a huge, huge public relations problem for them.
Yeah, well, then you get into a crunch also of signing up in time to avoid the mandate.
Yeah.
And you don't want to have to delay the mandate.
They do not want to have to delay that, absolutely.
The program.
Yeah. Eleanor Cliff, yeah. Thanks so much for joining me and for following me on Twitter.
You.
I appreciate it.
All righty.
Eleanor Cliff from the Daily Beast and the McLaughlin Group here with Paul Harris. I'll see you tomorrow for more America Weekend.
America.